This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. A lot of kids go through a dinosaur phase, begging parents to buy anything associated with the T-Rex. The Tyrannosaurus, the Stegosaurus, and Triceratops have a kind of celebrity status among the dino-crazed, appearing to be fixed and scaly bridges to the ancient past. The truth is not so static. For nearly three centuries, an ever-growing fossil record and scientific progress revealed the importance of a number of unsung species that may have far more to tell us about ancient biology than our popular paleo crushes. Brian Switek is author of My Beloved Brontosaurus. It's a book about the history of paleontology and the transformation of dinosaurs in popular imagination. We found his recent article, T-Rex Might Be the Thing with Feathers, on the science website Nautilus. Brian, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
How did the celebrity species come to dominate our image of the dinosaur?
Right now, they're famous because they're famous. They have a kind of cultural momentum that just can't be beat, partially because of their names. You know, you think of Tyrannosaurus Rex. There's no better name in all of science, as far as I'm concerned. It's absolutely perfect. So much so that when the legs of this dinosaur were being erected at the American Museum of Natural History in 1906, the New York Times already called it the prize fighter of antiquity, and it was going to be, you know, the biggest, meanest, most fierce dinosaur that there ever was, and it still kind of holds that status in our imagination. Where that came from is it just got there first. During the great bone rush of the late 1800s and sort of the following expeditions in the early 1900s, fossil hunters went out to the American West. They're getting complete skeletons. They're bringing them back to museums in the East, museums in Pittsburgh and New York City and Chicago and Philadelphia, and those dinosaurs kind of occupied that museum place first, and they got into the newspaper. People were very excited. No one had ever seen animals like this before, but you know, that was really only the beginning of paleontology in America. So all these dinosaurs that came after, and often many dinosaurs that were very significant to changing understanding of their biology, kind of got overshadowed by these celebrity species that just happened to be the most spectacular specimens that were found first.
So it was tough to look beyond these kind of poster children or these early finds. What then gets lost, Brian, when we don't go beyond those celebrity species?
Well, for one thing, how much there's left to find. Many people that I've spoken to during my talks and everything, they think most dinosaurs are already discovered, that we've found most of what there is to find. We're just kind of getting the fine print down at this point. And that's absolutely not true at all. Most dinosaurs are as yet undiscovered. There's about 500 genera that have been named so far, and it's estimated that there are over 1,800 genera during the sort of the heyday of the dinosaurs during their Mesozoic reign. So really, we're not even close to even finding all of them yet, much less understanding them. But beyond that, many of the species that we're finding now are just incredibly weird. They preserve structures that might not be found in other dinosaurs, like feathers. You know, many of these new dinosaurs coming out of China, covered in feathers, changing our perception of these animals' biology, how they insulated themselves, what colors they might have been, how feathers and birds evolved, because birds are modern dinosaurs after all. So really, the most important stuff, the most exciting aspects, I think, about understanding how these animals lived are coming from sort of unsung and little-known dinosaurs.
How about how the dinosaurs that we have in our imagination have changed? Let's look at Tyrannosaurus Rex. It was first named around the turn of the 20th century. Now, what has changed since our first conception of the T-Rex until today?
The first conception of Tyrannosaurus was as this kind of lumbering, almost Godzilla pose animal. I mean, Godzilla wasn't invented yet, but you know, this lumbering, pot-bellied carnivore that might have even been too big to actively hunt. Some paleontologists saw it as, you know, this scavenger, this Cretaceous cleanup crew, just munching on whatever it could find. Now it's much closer to the animal that you see in the Jurassic Park film, something that's very active, very lithe, very agile. Might have been social in some ways, and one of the coolest things is that is probably covered in some kind of feathery fuzz, some kind of proto-feather. We know there's some closely related tyrannosaurs that were found with feathers. And also just sort of the evolutionary logic, looking, where feathers exist in the dinosaur evolutionary tree. So the animal that it is now, this sort of gigantic carnivorous roadrunner, is quite different from the sort of tottering scavenger it was first envisioned as. Mm.
That movie, Jurassic Park, really embedded the images of dinosaurs in most of our minds. How did it change the place of the dinosaur in the public imagination?
Well, it was really a revitalization of dinosaurs in a way. This was coming at the end of a period in paleontology called the dinosaur renaissance, where dinosaurs were really being reinvented. I mean, previously they were seen as slow, stupid, swamp-dwelling, relatively drab, basically sort of behaviorally and otherwise like just big lizards, that they're these cold-blooded animals that, you know, couldn't be bothered to get out of the swamp, and they didn't do anything except eat and breed. Jurassic Park really was a way to use Hollywood special effects to bring the best science of the time to the public to really reinvigorate dinosaurs as they've never been seen before. Instead of those sort of lumbering, stupid animals, you had highly intelligent, active, social animals acting in a new way. And, you know, even though Jurassic Park is now 20 years old and dinosaurs have continued to change since then, it still is this major milestone in changing the public perception of what a dinosaur was. It really set the stage for, I mean, my generation and I think continuing generations' image of what a dinosaur is.
Your book is titled My Beloved Brontosaurus, and you made the Brontosaurus, which we now know never actually existed, the kind of the centerpiece of your book. Now, why?
Well, because it was an excellent sort of baseline to gauge just how much dinosaurs have changed. I mean, I met Brontosaurus, this dinosaur that's now defunct. It actually had been defunct since 1906, except no one really cared to put that into museums.
Are you kidding?
Yes,
I
a
grew up thinking there was a
paleontologist.
Brontosaurus.
Yeah, a paleontologist by the name of Elmer Riggs in 1906, he figured out that Apatosaurus and Brontosaurus were the same dinosaur. And because Apatosaurus had been named first by about, you know, 2 years, it had priority as the name. So that, you know, Apatosaurus became the proper name for the animal. But museums, for whatever reason, they just didn't go with the change. They kept Brontosaurus, you know, in their museum galleries and in their books, and it kind of became a popular shorthand. You know, paleontologists in their books would often talk about Brontosaurus just because they knew the public knew that dinosaur best. They didn't want to sort of rock the boat too much. It was only when the skull of this dinosaur was discovered in the late 1970s that the big image change to Apatosaurus happened. But even then, when I went to the American Museum of Natural History in 1988, I saw the Brontosaurus skeleton. You know, even though it had been scientifically extinct for, you know, 8 decades by then. So to me, it was the perfect totem or emblem to use to then show, okay, well, what have we learned since then? Why are the dinosaurs that I'm seeing now in film and art and books and magazines so different from the ones that I initially grew up with, as a way to talk about the science, how science is constantly changing, how we're pulling more than ever before out of dinosaur bones. You know, paleontology isn't a matter of just finding fossils and digging them up and putting them in a museum. That's really only the very beginning of unraveling this great story of evolution and the history of life on Earth.
Could you name for us just some of the species, the unsung species that have helped paleontologists understand the ancient world?
Yeah, one of the first ones is from my former home state of New Jersey. It's a dinosaur called Hadrosaurus. It's one of these shovel-beaked herbivorous dinosaurs that live relatively late in the Cretaceous. And it was the first dinosaur to be known from a relatively good partial skeleton. All the previous discoveries were either confused for other animals, or they were just, you know, bits of jaw and bits of leg and things like that. So you couldn't really get a good conception of what the whole animal was like. This was one of the first ones to show that dinosaurs carried their legs directly beneath their bodies, that in some of them their forelimbs were shorter than their hind limbs, so they had to walk, you know, on 2 legs most of the time. It kind of redefined the image of what a dinosaur was from a gigantic lizard, which is how they're first envisioned, into something that was kind of unique and had never been seen before. Following that, in the 1960s, in 1969, one of the most important dinosaurs ever found is called Deinonychus. It stood about as tall as, you know, the average height human. It had these switchblade claws on its feet. And when it was discovered, this was during the time when dinosaurs were thought to be slow and sluggish and stupid and swamp-bound. It really challenged that image. Just looking at its skeleton with those grasping hands and those sharp teeth and the switchblade claws and this long tail as a counterbalance, it had to be an active and dynamic animal. And it was found in a quarry with multiple specimens of Deinonychus and one of an herbivore, and it brought up the prospect, well, maybe these things were hunting as a group to bring this herbivore down when they died. So, you know, just in this one dinosaur really challenged the image of what a dinosaur was, sparked the dinosaur renaissance that I mentioned earlier. And then one of the latest discoveries in 1990, tied to that, I mean, Deinonychus, it wasn't only very active, but also was very, very bird-like. It looked like the earliest known fossil bird called Archaeopteryx, brought up the prospect that maybe birds are dinosaurs. And the piece of evidence that really opened the floodgates for sort of proving that to be true was a really tiny dinosaur about the size of a chicken called Sinosauropteryx. It was found in China. has filamentous feathers running all the way down its back. And this was the first definite non-avian dinosaur to be found with these kinds of feathers and really tied together and really confirmed the idea that birds are living dinosaurs, that many of the features that we think of being sort of unique to birds today actually have a very, very deep evolutionary history. So I don't think Sinosauropteryx is going to be a household word anytime soon, but it's one of the most important dinosaurs ever found. It dramatically changed our image of what it was to be a dinosaur.
Well, we obviously can't go through all 500 genera that have been named, but what would it take for us to have a more accurate or more complete spectrum in the future?
That's a really good question. I think it really comes down to science communication and how we, you know, get across new discoveries, that there aren't just this one-shot find of, okay, there's a new tyrannosaur, or there's a new horned dinosaur or something like that, but there's information that's really coming through. And I think one of the best ways that we might be able to do it is actually by partnering with Hollywood. I mean, Jurassic Park 4, Jurassic World was just announced not so long ago, coming out next summer. I think if the movie creators and the special effects artists could pick some lesser-known dinosaurs, could pick some animals that haven't had their time in the spotlight, really bring them to life as best we can. You really, to get the closest that we're really ever going to get to seeing a living non-avian dinosaur, I think that we can really introduce the public to sort of the greater variety of these dinosaurs, and you know, really sort of highlight some of these animals descended from dinosaurs like Velociraptor, but had pot bellies and Freddy Krueger claws covered in feathers and these little beaky heads. It's, you know, nothing like I've never seen anything like that on screen before. I think it would really shock audiences. So that's my plea to the creators of Jurassic Park 4 is pick out some of these lesser known weirdos and give them some time in the spotlight.
All right, wait till Hasbro gets a hold of them. Brian Sweetek, author of My Beloved Brontosaurus. It's a book about the history of paleontology. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.